Well, now that the writer's strike is finally over, have things gotten even crazier for you?
Absolutely. I mean, things never really died down for me, actually. I was working straight through the strike on two TV series.
So now, did the strike give you time to pursue other projects?
Absolutely not. The strike didn't give me time to catch up on sleep. everyone keeps saying to me if I'm happy that I'm going back to work now, and I have to always reply that I never got to stop working. I was very fortunate, though, I mean, all joking aside, that Battlestar Galactica and Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, stayed in production, in post-production, during the strike, so I had plenty to keep me busy.
Mm-hmm. So now you mentioned Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance that between like Battlestar Galactica? You also worked on Eureka during that time as well, or?
Thankfully, no. I didn't have to do all three shows at once, which I will probably have to do later this year. But balancing Battlestar and Terminator wasn't as hard as doing Battlestar and Eureka, which I had to do last summer when I did Razor at the same time as Eureka.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason is that the tone of those two shows, of Battlestar and Terminator, are much more similar. So it's easier to be working on Battlestar on Monday and then work on Sarah Connor on Tuesday, for example, because it's not a total change of pace. Whereas when you're going from working on Razor to doing the season finale of Eureka, it's apples and oranges.
So now, when Sarah Connor Chronicles was first announced and you were brought in as the composer, I always felt that your style of music fit Terminator. So what are the main differences in scoring between Terminator as opposed to Battlestar Galactica?
The main difference is that, believe it or not, I have more creative freedom on Terminator than I do on Battlestar.
Hmm.
At this point in time, Battlestar have been working on it for four seasons. Richard Gibbs and I worked on the series that set a lot of the tone. And at this point, Battlestar is a thrill to work on because it comes so quickly. But also, just by nature of the fact that it's our fourth season, there's less innovation happening in the music because we've just established the tone and we've established themes for all the characters. So if Kara or Rosalind is doing something on screen, I kind of know right off the bat what that theme should be doing there. Whereas with Terminator, and also because there's nothing setting a precedent, I was able to come in and completely reinvent the music and do whatever I wanted to do. And it just so happens that what I wanted to do is acknowledge in some musical way the scores of Terminator 1 and Terminator 2. But beyond that, I was able to do whatever I want. And in fact, I had an incredible amount of freedom from the producers to explore my own ideas. And so in many ways, Terminator is more challenging, at least at this point. But I remember my first season doing Battlestar Galactica. When you're just getting into a show, it takes time.
So now, what is your instrument palette for Terminator?
Terminator is a very interesting set of sounds. The percussion is just as important as it is in Battlestar, only instead of being organic ethnic percussion, such as taikos and frame drums and tablas, it's metallic percussion and sampled percussion, almost all of which comes from metallic sources. We bought a big oil drum that we hit, and we have these metallic bars and aluminum plates, and some of the stuff gets pitch shifted around, creates as many different textures as I have on Battlestar, only they're all metallic sounding. The synthesizer element is definitely more prominent because that's another way I'm acknowledging the first two films, which were, in my opinion, two of the most daring synth scores ever made. I mean, they're the pinnacle of synth work in each of their eras.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a certain amount of that, which gives the score a very cold, synthetic, robotic texture. And those are the two elements that I drew from the first two films. And what I've added is I've tried to add an emotional character that was missing from the first two film scores, partly just because the tone of those films didn't require it. But I added an electric string quartet, which is four musicians playing string instruments we're not miking in an acoustic environment. We're running them into guitar amps and miking the guitar amps. It sounds like an orchestra. It sounds very lush and very beautiful. However, it also has a very subtle element of electronic quality, and it sounds manipulated. It sounds kind of robotic and unusual. And as far as I know, I don't know of any other TV show that's ever used an ensemble like this in this way, and it really gives the score a unique sounding character. It really makes it stand out, I think, from both Terminator 1 and Terminator 2 and from anything else on TV right now.
So you are, in fact, using live players. It's just not all synthesized.
Absolutely. In fact, I use as many live players as I do on Battlestar, if not more. We also have Chris Bleth, who plays all the ethnic instruments on Battlestar, plays all the orchestral woodwind instruments on Sarah Connor. So you'll hear there's a lot of alto flute solos and English horn solos, and it really does end up with a very oddly orchestral feel, even though ultimately, just like in Battlestar, I feel very strongly that if you're not going to have an orchestra, you shouldn't use orchestral sounds. So it's a very interesting blend, and I've been using these episodes as a way of experimenting and trying to figure out what the best combination of these sounds is. And if anyone listening has been following the show, the episode that aired, I believe, 6, that was called Dungeons and Dragons, that is the episode that we did last because it has all these big CG effect shots that takes place in the future.
Right.
And so as a result, to me, that's that episode, even though it's not the end, is the one where the score sounds the most developed and the most mature. And I'm, you know, really, really hoping we go to season 2 so that I can continue to explore with this ensemble.
Mm-hmm. Now, because it is sort of a short, kind of truncated season, is that harder to score? Or is it harder to develop themes for various characters and that sort of thing?
Well, yes, normally, yes. However, in this case, it wasn't because it wasn't intended to be a truncated musical season. The what ended up being the season finale wasn't written or shot to be a season finale. It was just going to be another episode.
Right.
We had 4 more episodes to go. So all the groundwork was being laid to lead up to 4 episodes we did not see. So in many ways, the pacing of the show was sort of unaffected. But also, the other thing that makes it a little easier in that regard is that there's fewer characters than in Battlestar. Mm-hmm. And in Battlestar, every character has at least one theme. Kara has 3 distinct musical themes that I'm juggling at all times.
Right.
And also the way these shows work is, you know, you get an episode about Kara or an episode about Lee, and then they might not have an episode centered around them for 4 or 5 more shows. So what happens is that the character development happens on a much broader scale in Battlestar. Mm-hmm. And it also means I just get fewer opportunities to develop their music. Whereas in Sarah Connor, you've got a very small number of characters, and especially once Derek Reese is introduced halfway through, you've got Derek, John, Sarah, Ellison, Cameron. That's 5 people that are in basically every episode.
Mm-hmm.
So those 5 themes that I wrote are developing much quicker because every episode I'm getting an opportunity to add different layers to it. You know, for example, my personal favorite of those, aside from Sarah's theme, which is used relentlessly in each episode in the beginning and ending because she has these monologues that I use her theme with. But Derek's theme was an interesting one because he starts off, we're very suspicious of him, and his theme is supposed to suggest a hint of malice or a hint of danger. We're not quite sure what his deal is. And then as his character warms, his theme leans in that direction as well, but it still has to present aspects of mystery and maybe he doesn't have the best intentions. And in fact, Cameron's character is equally complex, which just makes it a thrill to write music for.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, when scoring Terminator, I'm sure that Brad Fidel's music is a guideline for you. But other than the beginning, does it show up anywhere else?
They only were able to license the theme for the opening title card, which was something I felt very strongly about, that rhythmic motive that is identifiable with Terminator. And as much as I would have loved to have had the melodic theme incorporated all throughout the show, it was a purely financial decision that was made mm-hmm. by the producers and made by Warner Brothers. So it did leave me in the position where I needed to create a new theme for Sarah because the theme from the movies wouldn't really, we couldn't afford it. However, necessity created something that turned out to be a good situation because ultimately, that theme from the first 2 Terminator films, in my mind, doesn't really associate with Sarah Connor directly. And even more importantly, I visualize Arnold Schwarzenegger when I hear that theme.
Right.
And in many ways, that this was I was able to create a theme that was about Sarah Connor particularly. And I think that actually turned out to be a good thing because that's a theme now that I can associate just with her. And also, it has emotional elements that the Terminator movie theme did not. There are elements of real hope and some uplifting elements in her theme that you hear in very key moments. That in the music to the first two Terminator films, there was no reason to write anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So in many ways, I'm adding emotional layers to what was to the character that weren't there in the movies, and that's the same thing that the writers are doing and the producers are doing for the show. We're taking this character that we didn't see very much of in the movies.
Right.
We saw a very limited aspect of her. We saw her as this completely innocent soul. We saw her as this trained, militant, badass psycho who wanted to be a mom. But we never really got to see that transition or see all the different layers that are at work in a person like that. I mean, that's an almost schizophrenic person, you know? And so this TV show presents the perfect opportunity to show all that. And I needed to create a theme that would be capable of showing both sides.
Well, now, with all this heavy music, Eureka must seem like a relief.
Oh, you're telling me.
With Eureka being much lighter, is it hard? Like you mentioned that it was sort of hard to change hats. How do you do that effectively?
I'll tell you when I figure it out. Eureka, the biggest challenge with Eureka is that every episode, or basically every episode, the entire town is threatened with complete annihilation, whether it's a nuclear bomb or a flesh-eating virus or a killer tornado. So at the end of every episode, you have these big action sequences or tense moments where literally the lives of every man, woman, and child in the town are at stake.
Mm-hmm.
However, and if it were Battlestar or Terminator, this would be easy. I'm used to dealing with this. I know what that music is supposed to sound like. But Eureka, you have to keep it a little lighter. I don't mean to suggest that, you know, you don't take it seriously. The audience should feel like there is a sense of danger and a sense of accomplishment when they get around this. But ultimately, you don't want to necessarily say to the music, with the music, you don't want to say, yes, everyone is about to die. You have to kind of keep it a little lighter. So it's been a challenge because my training and instinct the past 4 years has been honed to make the music as dark as possible, and Sarah Connor only helps me go down that road. So, you know, we use a lot of different instrumentation and different styles to communicate the lighthearted quality in Eureka. I tend to think of it as country, bluegrass, Zydeco, blues, meets 80s new wave and Nintendo music from the 80s. So it's a very odd sound. And in fact, we've got an album coming out this summer of the music that I did for the second season. And I'm just thrilled with the way the album turned out. I mean, I really hope that people check it out and realize how different it is than Battlestar and Terminator and all the other stuff that I do that's so dark.
You just mentioned the album for Eureka that's coming out. Are we going to see any of your other work released?
Yes, actually, I should have three records coming out this year, although we don't know for sure about one of them. Eureka's coming out this summer. I've got an album of Sarah Connor, the first season in the works.
Mm-hmm.
We're still working out all the legal details on that, so I don't know any release date yet. And then I'm doing another little horror film called Rest Stop 2, which is a sequel to Rest Stop, which is a film I did a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I just finished this week, and this album is just going to kick ass, if I can say that on the air.
That's okay. Kicking ass is good.
Yeah, it's a bluegrass southern rock blues score for a horror film. I tried to think of it as if Lynyrd Skynyrd decided to score a horror movie, what would it sound like? And it's just a blast. We went into the studio with this great band. It plays more like a concept rock album than a score. It's going to be really interesting. So I certainly hope that people check it out. And that'll probably be out in October, I think, with the release of the film.
Right. Are we going to see another sort of maybe variation on your psychotic gospel piece?
yes, you most certainly will.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Great.